Today on the podcast, we have Todd Barretts, and we get into why knowing the vocabulary is not the same as knowing yourself. Right? You can know your attachment style. You can know what love bombing is. You can have a word for every single thing anyone has done to you. But somehow, it is harder than ever to date and have healthy relationships. So today, we're going to get into all of this and why some of the most self-aware people we know are some of the people that are the most stuck. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Nuance Needed podcast. I'm Amanda.
And this is Sam.
And we are very excited because we have Todd Barretts here of Your Diagnosis. How are you, Todd?
Hello.
We're excited today to get into the nuance of dating and relationships and sex and all of that stuff. Obviously, we've known each other for a while, Todd, but for people who maybe are unfamiliar with your journey, and I haven't probably heard it fully told out, how did you get started on Instagram and decide that this was what was important to talk about online?
Well, it goes back to birth. No, I mean, it was really an accident. I wasn't trying really to do anything other than keep myself busy. I was bored. I wanted a creative outlet. And I had just gotten out of a relationship. I never had a personal Instagram. So I was bored. And then I started seeing other people's content and I was like, oh my God, this is terrible. I love everybody though. So then I was just like really fired up to post things. And then, you know, one thing led to another. But I'm a therapist. And I became a therapist because my family is insane and they made me crazy. It's all their fault. And so therapy forever, school, more therapy, being a therapist, it's all part of the journey.
Mm-hmm. What would you say are some of the big pet peeves you had when you first started online, and how has that changed over the past 6+ years?
I have many pet peeves. and I include some of my content in it too. Like, it's so hard not to fall into the trap of trying to create some kind of clickbait or something that's really catered to going viral in whatever algorithm we exist in. It's hard not to play that game. So what I'm about to say doesn't necessarily only apply to me. I mean, to others, it also applies to me. That being, you know, the listicles, the red flags, the real kind of black and white, like run if they do this kind of thing, that really just create a whole entire value system that, like, you know, people are ignorant and really impressionable and suggestible, and they internalize this shit as like truth when it's just someone's opinion, and it may also be shaped by their desire to go viral and be famous. So, you know, it's pretty, I mean, it's like, it's all content. Even the good content is you know, kind of, I don't, now I feel like I'm saying everything is bad. Not everything is bad. But the black and white stuff, I mean, the title of your podcast, Nuance Needed, is pretty much any post that's lacking the nuance that is needed, to sum it up. But yeah, the red flags, the lists, and then we transitioned into narcissists, which was like, what? That was like 3 years ago. Because before that, narcissism didn't exist.
Yep.
Somehow now we've discovered it. I'm wondering when borderline is going to get its debut, which I'm surprised
agree with that.
It hasn't. And then everyone's going to be borderline. Oh. That's actually a new book to maybe think about, right?
I actually had the thought about borderline a little bit ago because I feel like friendship content is coming to the surface of like how to make friends, female connection, building community, all of this. And I feel like starting to identify problematic friends as borderline, if people figure out what that looks like and is, I feel like that could be like the next trend, I think.
Yeah, I really hope not.
I hope. I mean, I pray not. I pray I'm very wrong. But I feel like
something has to be next, because attachment's old. Narcissism is still hot. I mean, we still love avoidant stuff. What's next? What do you think's going to be next? So borderline's an option.
I feel like the neurodivergence is like the very common thread through everything lately. I feel like it's trying to like really bust itself to the surface, but I feel like everybody's afraid to touch it because
I'm afraid to touch it.
I'm afraid to touch it.
I don't want to touch it.
I don't go there. But I think
the other thing that's become so popular, which I love talking about, is the nervous system.
Oh, the nervous system.
Yes. It just makes me laugh so much because it's like I use it often too, and I'm kind of catching myself and trying not to as much because it's such a good explanation, and you know, it exists, but it's like everything is your nervous system. Where is it though?
It's like those posters, right? They have your muscles, and then they have one of all of your nerves.
Okay, so it's all the nerves.
Going through.
It's all the nerves.
Okay. Is your nervous system. Yeah. Yeah. Do you know what I spent a lot of time thinking about is, am I reacting to what's happening online, or am I reacting to people's reactions of what's happening online? And then are we reacting? And it's like, what is real? What is up? What is down? And it's, I go to dark places when I think about
that. It's a lot of reacting. It's a lot of dopamine hits, which I think is what a lot of content is, including my own, you know, where people can read something and get real kind of, yes, that's it, you know, and then 5 seconds later, they're the same person. But some line really spoke to them or gave them an excuse to blame their ex or whatever. And they feel empowered for 5 seconds. But it's a lot of just this like surges of dopamine. And it's like a sugar high, but for therapy. And it's not even therapy, for content or for self-help.
In terms of, we've kind of touched on like narcissism, gaslight. I feel like trauma was a really huge one that has sort of petered out a little bit, but still floating around. When you think in your work, what are the ones that like when you're in therapy with someone or you're doing couples therapy or sex therapy with someone because you're a couples therapist, what does it look like when people in couples counseling are using these terms in session now?
You know, maybe I just got lucky, but a lot of my clients, they're not coming in being like, I'm being gaslit. Well, I mean, I guess people are saying gaslit. I mean, maybe I just dissociate when they say it. That's why. No, I think I just like quickly, I don't dismiss it, but I kind of hear it and I say a different word or I like explore it more.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if it's something that they keep coming back to, I'll be like, so you keep coming back to this word or whatever, or this situation or this black and white way of thinking. But it's not, thankfully, I don't think that my clients come in and they're just like, I have this gaslighting narcissist avoidant ex who's breadcrumbing me. And, you know, there's a lot of the narcissism one is, you know, that is the thorough line in all of our lives right now. And I think a lot of people, parents especially, have narcissistic traits. And so I try to focus on that, but I'm not really interested in a diagnosis. Like I don't care. If I have a client that is very dependent on labeling somebody a narcissist in their life, you know, I just talk about, what happened with this person? You know, it's like, and that's why the content online is silly to me, because it's like, okay, now you found the word, now what? You know, like, what are you going to do with that information? Like, what do you do with it? Are you just saying it because it feels good? Do you want to actually reflect and think about what happened for you, what your experience was and how awful that may have been? Do you want to think about what drove you to the person, why you stayed? Where do you want to go with this journey of yours? And that goes for a lot of the content, is that it's just very abrupt. And then there's just nothing, no exploration afterwards. So I try to do the exploration afterwards.
I think that it is really hard too with, you know, Sam and I talk a lot about, you know, self-awareness and what is the line between self-awareness and sort of like self-obsession and self-awareness and self like overly focusing on yourself. And I think it's such a tricky line.
Well, I've found like in my work and as a content creator as well, that so many people think they're focusing on themselves, but they're just trying to like perfect themselves. Like, I think people are trying to latch onto these terms as this like clear guidebook to like live in a way where like they won't have to experience disappointment, or they'll be surrounded by like a perfect circle of people who never disappoint them or hurt them or they have to repair with, because everything is just always good and calm and happy. And I'm like, well, you're not actually trying to know yourself. Like, you're not trying to understand who you are when you feel offended. Like, how do you know that that's happened to you? Right? Like, if you're angry, why are you angry? Like, how, what value has been crossed for you? Or, you know, why are you upset? And I think my frustration with the content has been it all misses that, because that's like the actual work. I think the work is like actually understanding like the fullness of yourself rather than just this perseveration on like, well, this thing happened to me. How do I get over it? And it's like, well, you won't, because it's part of you and it's coming with you, and we can figure out how to make peace with that. But to this constant obsession with like, I'm going to get over it. I'm going to get over it. I'm going to get over it. It's like, well, you never will. So.
Yeah. And people don't want to hear that.
No.
No, people don't want that. Mm-mm. Which is why you're healed when you ... does really well. Right. And it's what people consume the most, yes, is because they want to know that something they can do will make something they don't like go away. Mm-hmm. And that's just not how it works. But that's why I think people just kind of are on this hamster wheel. I've been writing about it a lot. This kind of, it's just this, that I think that many people have just become obsessed, and, you know, and it's just another form expression of the wound, you know, mm-hmm. that they become so attached to their wounds and processing it and feeling it and touching it and this and that. And, you know, it's like at some point, you know, you talked about it for 4 years, not saying don't talk about your mother ever again, but it's like, you know, we can't just keep regurgitating our insight over and over and over until it gets to a point where it's, you know, we have this kind of identified place where we're identifying more with our wounds than we are with, you know, knowing that we have the freedom to make different choices and, you know, move on, not in a way where it's gone, but in a way where we're moving somewhere.
Well, it totally, because insight feels like a solution. Because when you have the light bulb moment, you're like, oh, it makes sense to me now. So this means I'll be able to let it go, move on, forget it. And it's like, that's no, like that. There's no plan in insight. There's no figuring out like, well, how do I adapt? How do I want to behave differently? What are different things I'm looking for, like in a relationship or a connection? Or, you know, what are my expectations from this person in my life if I repair? Like, there's no insight, just feels really pretty. And I think there's a time and a place for it. Like, at some point you do have to like take time to connect the dots, but I think a lot of people are trapped in the insight loop, and they think if they just get more insight, they'll eventually fight the inertia of getting out of the loop.
Well, as you were saying that, Sam, the metaphor that came to my mind was like when you're in that haze of like online shopping and you like think this perfect product is going to like save your life, right? And you're like still in the searching and it's exciting, but you haven't gotten the product yet. You haven't had to deal with the reality that this product isn't going to change your life, or it'll probably break, or, you know, you won't wear it, whatever it is. And it's like when you're just on the hunt to collect information, it feels really good because you don't have to actually deal with the reality of what that information means.
I love online shopping, by the way. It feels so good. That is a high I'm willing to pursue, and I do every day. And that's why I...
Yeah. It's like especially with parenting, I get so into like, this product is going to make such a big difference for my child and it will make her easier and more calm. And then like I get it and it's like, right, I still have to be the one to like help her with it and engage with her with it and, you know, set up an obstacle course to get her energy out or whatever it is. It still takes work from me, which sucks.
Which I think brings something up interesting, which I've been kind of grappling with myself. You know, like at what point do you stop process? Like at what point isn't there enough therapy enough? Like I've been in therapy for fucking ever. And I'm just like, I'm in a place where I'm feeling good. I've taken a break from therapy for the first time ever in my life. I mean, I still see my therapist like once a month, but for me, that's a break. And I see people who are just kind of on this ongoing quest of, you know, therapy and retreats and spirituality. And I was doing that last year because I was going through a lot. But now I'm at this place where I'm like, you know, at what point can we just like stop obsessing, stop looking for the right thing, the right product, whatever, and just kind of, I don't know, live our lives? Because people are just so obsessed. And it really is, the analogy of the online shopping is true, because it's like, okay, so you get this insight, you learn this one thing, and then it's, you know, I'm going to say this, and I kind of half believe it, but I feel like everything is a scam. Like, everything is a scam lately, including therapy sometimes. Like, it's all a scam. Like, it's all a scam. And I'm really having an issue with, like, the content that I create, the therapy that I provide. Like,
same.
I'm feeling like I need to caveat everything with, it's theoretical, there's no blood test. I don't know. Pick whatever story you want to pick. Pick whatever feels most congruent to your life. I don't, you know, like, we do, like, the nervous system thing. Like, I'm like, whatever you like. Like, whatever fits. But, like, at the end of the day, we don't know. You know, it's not like I'm getting my testosterone checked and it's like, this is the level of my testosterone, period. It's like, maybe it's your trauma. Maybe you're constipated. Maybe you're just in a bad mood. Maybe your brain is just, like, tired. I don't, you know, who knows? It's just, so I'm just like, so now, so I don't know what to make of all of that. But I'm just like, everything is a scam.
I don't know, like, the two of you have been in the content creation game longer than me. And honestly, the two of you were some of the inspiration for me starting my own content journey. So this is, it's like mom and dad. Thanks.
It's exactly that. Yeah. Mom, you want to process? Completely.
Yeah. Let's talk about it. I hated myself. And then Todd, you had a post note. Something that I've been doing a lot, like, in my personal work and also with, like, a lot of my clients and trying to convey it as well as you can in content is, like, just because you're experiencing anxiety or sadness or fear or overwhelm does not mean, like, anything has to actually even be done. Like, you're allowed to just experience those things because you are a human who is going to have, like, 50,000 different mood points in a day because life is constantly moving and evolving. And I think people get really wrapped around, like, I have to do something about my anxiety. Like, I have to fix it. I have to deal with it. I have, exactly as you said, Todd, like, you know, this obsession with processing. And it's like, well, why don't you just learn to live? Like, learn to keep doing something that you want to do, even if you notice that you feel anxious. Like, if you're feeling anxious, but you still want to go out, just go out. Like, don't feed into, like, oh, I'm anxious. What does this mean? What do I need to do? Like, how do I still go out? Just decide. Like, I wanted to go out, so I'm still going to go out because I'm an adult with free will.
We also need to build our tolerance. Like, I think that, you know, a lot of this has also just been, like, shrinking. People's lives have sort of shrunk over the past, you know, few years especially. And I think that, again, it feels much better to figure out why you're anxious rather than go do something and live with it. And that, like, the irony of it is, like, that's the intervention. Yeah. Is like, go, no, like, deal with how it feels in your body, learn to manage that. And I think about it all the time, like, with Todd, you were kind of saying, right, like, where is the line to take a break from therapy? And I think about it a lot in terms of when I first got sober, after I'd been sober for about, like, a year and a half or 2 years, my therapist was like, you need to take a break. Like, I want you to go live and see how you deal with things, because at a certain point, right, it's sort of like even with addiction of, if when you first get sober, you need to avoid all these people, places, and things. And that's really good. And that's really healthy. And you shouldn't be just, like, going to a bar, obviously. But at some point, the avoidance starts to cause more problems. If you can't go to a wedding with your family member, for example, then that's going to start causing other problems. So, like, healing is such this delicate balance of taking care of yourself, but also exposing yourself, because at some point, doing too little starts to do more harm than doing the right amount. Like, it's such a balance.
And how do we know? I do think, though, people should figure out who they are and then they can stop for a period of time. Like, I do love insight. Yeah. Like, I don't regret, you know, all the time I spent figuring it out. But it's just become very clear that I think collectively most people are obsessed.
I know Amanda's relationship to TikTok, but Todd, how?
No, I just started. Oh. I mean, I'm on there.
Okay.
But I heard. And then someone told me that kids don't care about Instagram. And I was like, oh God. Because, you know, I'm constantly like, I don't want to be on Instagram, but I'm, like, tethered to it. But And then I was like, okay, I'll do TikTok. And then
I actually think it's more enjoyable content creation wise. It feels a little less like stuffy, I think, for me. But regardless, there's conversation going on right now about how there's all of these very young Gen Z content creators, like early 20s, who are getting their first jobs. And some of them like aren't even surviving onboarding because they like they're either getting fired because they realize like the company realizes how unprepared they are and can't cope with anything, or they get overwhelmed, or they just have this like obscene list of demands that you have things that they need from the employer, and they need this and they need this time off for that and whatever. And it's been interesting that older Gen Z is now commenting on it and kind of having this like come to Jesus realization of like, we're too fragile. Like we have insulated ourselves too much from reality, and it's now impacting our ability to function. And now as Gen Z is like more firmly in the workforce, it's like they're having this realization of like, do I need this much cushion? Like, is it really insane that I'm asked to work during the day at the job that hired me? Like, is that like, maybe that's just a normal experience of life, you know? It's so I think that like kind of internet conversation, I guess, for lack of a better term, came up for me with what you two were talking about. I think we know too much, and I think we're too aware, and we've done too little.
Fragile is a good word.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's a spicy word, but I think of it as like we have this like raw baby skin, and you know, sometimes calluses are good. You can't wear the right shoes if you don't have good calluses. Yeah. But then otherwise you keep getting blisters.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it all comes, I mean, I don't know. I like to think about this. It's historical. You know, we were raised by a generation who was the complete opposite way. You know, their skin was so thick that no emotion seeped through, and everyone denied everything, and everything was repressed. And then they traumatized us, you know, as one does with unresolved issues, as they make it everybody else's issue. And so now, you know, we're like, oh, it hurt so much, because it did. But now we're kind of going in the other direction, where we're kind of overfeeling and overprocessing and over everything, to the point where many people are extremely fragile and have lost the resilience that our parents' generation built from their repression and denial. I mean, like, it feels like I'm talking myself into circles, but like, again, just like there's no kind of answer to any of this beyond, I don't know what, but like it all comes from somewhere. So it's all their fault. That's all. Yeah,
exactly.
And then there were wars and, you know.
Yeah. I mean, Amanda and I talk about this all the time of like, we just cannot figure out this pendulum swing. Like, we go too far either direction every single time, no matter what the debate is. And it's, if you're able to like step back and remove yourself from it, it's kind of fascinating to watch, but infuriating to live through, I think, for me anyway.
And then I wonder how much of the pendulum swing is just like people reacting to reactions.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. I think about, you know, Todd, Sam and I did a Sabrina Carpenter episode last year during like the drama of whether her like new album came out and people were saying she was like a bad feminist and she was doing a lot of stuff. And we kind of had this whole conversation about like the nuance of you can like an album and you don't have to think it's like this huge feminist work of art and what is the line there? But so much of what sometimes I can't tell is like the internet blows things up because it's like someone has an opinion, then other people are reacting to that opinion as that those people are terrible. And then those people are reacting to those people's reactions. So it leaves very little space to find the nuance because people that are like, yeah, I can take it or leave it, I can see both sides, are not the people that we see on the internet. If you are hearing Sam and Todd and I talk about all of this self-help vocabulary, self-diagnosis, diagnosing others, and you're feeling like, maybe I actually need a higher level of support. Maybe I actually need help from a professional therapist. My practice, Therapy for Women Center, is taking new clients. We have therapists licensed in 43 states across the country, including California and New York, if you know, you know. And we also have physical office locations in the Philadelphia area. We also have psychiatry. If you're looking for medication management, we would love to help you with that, including ADHD treatment. So check us out at therapyforwomencenter.com. You've talked a lot recently, Todd, that I've really loved reading about sort of like we're dating as a way to like manage risk, manage enthusiasm, even with making friends, right? Like we are afraid to be eager. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, all these kind of rules about dating and all, I mean, it's the same thing we were saying before. A lot of it is just anxiety management about feeling things or about getting hurt. The people have now repurposed as health. Like they're calling these things as like, it's healthy. A lot of people are calling it discernment. And it's like, no, you're just defended and you're picking up on some random characteristics and you're telling yourself that this person isn't going to work for you. And it's just another way that people are avoiding vulnerability. And it's why people are so alone, because they're showing up armed to dates one or whatever, armed with like a list of red flags or things that they're afraid of or characteristics or traits that they believe will lead to some kind of horrible outcome that they won't be able to control or recover from. And so therefore are pretty avoidant. And most people don't realize that they are actually, everyone is avoidant to some extent. Everyone is emotionally unavailable, especially if you're subscribing to all of these listicles about who you shouldn't be dating. Which isn't to say that you shouldn't think about, you know, is this person a safe person? But it is to say that most of it is anxiety rebranded as health, you know, that you don't in fact need to go and ask these top three questions to see if they're a narcissist or if they're going to be a safe partner. That's fundamentally coming from a guarded place. So the reality is you actually need to be less guarded so you can show up and actually experience a person to see if you like them, one, which is why we're there on a date, and two, to see if in fact you do feel safe, because you can't figure out if you feel safe if you're showing up with 25,000 guards from every single meme that you read that told you to look out for these signs. Everyone's preoccupied, which is invulnerable and unavailable.
So I mean, yeah, like the word like vulnerability is risky, right? Allowing someone to see you, to know you, all is risky. So yeah, I love the framing of when we're doing all these things, when we're protecting ourselves, when we're using this language, we are trying to like lessen the risk and protect ourselves.
And people have just like all sorts of ideas about what is potentially dangerous or what is a red flag or what is energetically the wrong fit for them that is not grounded in any kind of reality about what a good enough relationship would look like, what a relationship over a longer period of time may require. You know, it's all grounded in fear. It's just about fear, is that people are dating from a fear-based, it's a fear-based approach to dating, which, you know, as we know, it's not a great way to live. And it certainly isn't going to create connection.
Mm-mm. So the boyfriend that I have now, we matched probably like beginning to mid-March, I think, on Bumble, and started talking and connected very quickly, and you know, we're both like, you know, kind of both 35. We've both done work. We're being very intentional that we want to find someone who's like a long-term partner. And so I think we were both just showing up very authentically and trying really hard to like be open. And it was great. And I was super happy as it was getting started. And then I noticed around like mid-April, like beginning to mid of April, my algorithm was one of the most obscene things I had ever been a part of. Of every single post I got was 3 signs he's about to leave you, 4 signs he's not interested in you. Like, no. You know, look for this if he did that. Right. And oh, he gave you a forehead kiss. That means he's going to ghost you tomorrow. Like that's the forehead kiss of doom and death or whatever. And there's actually like a really funny moment. So the moment that I realized I needed to completely dismiss myself from this world in order to try to see if I could make this relationship work was when he gave me a forehead kiss. And I literally said to him, are you going to ghost me tomorrow? And he was like, what? And I was like, well, you know, like on the internet, they said like guys give you a forehead kiss when they're about to ghost you. And he was like, no. And I was like, awesome. I like my anxiety and my insecurity just took what was a very sweet moment and spun it into this whole narrative that had no basis in reality out of this attempt to try to like protect myself from this fear of like him just evaporating. And I just completely stopped engaging. Like I even kind of like pulled back on content creation and I just was like, I have to focus on this. Like I have to allow myself to experience this connection and see if it's something that like makes me happy. Even if I see that he has imperfections and he sees my imperfections and like, can we talk? What are like, what is important to me when he shows up versus what all of these randos on Instagram are telling me should be important or TikTok. And, you know, we're now, you know, in a very happy, stable place and, you know, have the labels and the things and things.
Does he give you any more forehead kisses?
So he didn't give me a forehead kiss for like 5 weeks. Like, I did. Yeah. And so I finally said to him, I was like, oh my God, did you just give me a forehead kiss? And he was like, yeah, I didn't want to give it to you because I didn't want you to think that like I was going to leave. And I was like, you know, like, but it was a fascinating experience to live that. And it's made me really sad for a lot of people because I think I'm lucky that like I have these skills like at a baseline to be able to navigate some of this. And like I've done a lot of my work and I've been in therapy for forever to try to, you know, hash stuff out. And I just think like how many people are blowing up actually really good things that have a lot of potential because of this like anxiety fueled nightmare that they find themselves stuck in of getting like fed all of this anecdotal one size fits all information. It's been a really, really interesting like 4 or 5 months.
That's funny. And the person that posted the thing about forehead kisses is probably some random fitness instructor.
Probably.
Everyone's an expert, has an expert opinion.
Yeah. Yes.
But yeah, I mean, I think that is the thing that, you know, we haven't said, which is it's very sad. It's very sad because people are really struggling and, you know, they are not even really aware of what they're struggling with. And it's just a lot of, you know, they'll suffer and people are suffering. Mm-hmm. But now you know that you can receive a forehead kiss and no one will leave.
And no one's going to leave. So it's lovely. Beautiful. Healing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cured.
Yeah. I see it more in like the parenting realm, but there's like a lot of scare tactics around like, you know, moms and women of if your child says this, they're not going to have a good relationship with you when you grow up. And I just see there's so much anxiety in like the parenting space of messing up your kids. And then it's like we're spending so much time worrying about messing up our kids that then we're not present with their kids, right? Which is then creating the other problem. So it is just fascinating how much sort of the spiraling and overly trying to control things creates a whole new set of problems sometimes.
Yeah, I do a lot of AMAs lately, mostly because I'm bored. And, you know, I usually get asked the question of, you know, when my kid asks me about sex, you know, what should I do? And it's like, you know, the first thing is you should work out whatever sexual issues you have with yourself that is prompting you to ask me this question because you will give it to your kid, you know, and that's the transmission of it. Just like, you know, the forehead kiss, it's the same kind of dynamic that gets, you know, he's like, oh God, I shouldn't do this. And similarly with a parent and sexuality, you know, is that it really creates this, elicits these negative reactions that we were trying to avoid by being so worried about something, but, you know, it doesn't really work. Because the kid gets anxious, the partner gets anxious, or won't give you, neglects your forehead, or, you know, could become a disaster, really.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Todd, is sort of right? Like, as we're talking about, it is sad, and some people have genuinely been burned. And I think probably that person who talked about the forehead kiss was probably ghosted by someone, and they were, you know, trying to do a public service announcement. And that's what's hard about all of this. What do you think are some ways that we can sort of like distinguish what is a defense that's like outlived its usefulness from protection that we still need?
I mean, well, that's the $1 million question. I know that's a loaded question. In many ways, at least what I've been learning personally, it's like kind of the journey of life. I mean, the older I get, the more I know myself from doing work and processing, sometimes over processing, but also more so in living and having experiences and understand and using those experiences to better understand myself, my needs, and being able to be more declarative with myself and my needs. And then the more I've gotten to know myself, the more I know where that line is. But people are always looking for that line, like between their anxiety and their intuition, et cetera, when they should push themselves outside their comfort zone and when to stay. And like, you know, it's not, I mean, I'm sure I could write a great, and I just did, I wrote an article about it, but, you know, ultimately it comes out of experience, out of many years. And I think, you know, it takes a long time to really figure that out. And it's not through reading, you know, or an answer that I may or may not give about, you know, where that line is. Like, you know, how do you know when it's self-abandonment and all of these other words and this shit and that? I think it's individually based. It can't be quantified. It can only be lived experientially. And it's constantly changing and evolving and depends on the time of day. You know, it's really an intricate question. With just as much of a complex answer that, again, I don't think people want to hear. But I do think, again, it comes from over a long period of time, getting to know yourself, self-awareness, knowing who you are, what you want, what you like, what you don't like, when your anxiety is from being in the wrong place or with the wrong person versus, you know, it is a defense. And I know that time is not the answer that people want, but it really is. And again, it's not idle time doing nothing. Time, you know, experimenting, exploring, moving outside your comfort zone and seeing how that feels. Maybe that it's fine. Maybe you're like, oh no, this isn't good. And so, you know, you go right back into your comfort zone, but maybe it grows. You know, a lot of time and experimenting and exploring and curiosity. It's really the only way you can find that line. And then that line has changed. It's going to change. Like, it will.
Totally. Totally. I think so much about how I think so many of us get obsessed with being done, being figured out, not wanting something to change once we figure it out. And yeah, you can get better at knowing yourself and collect these experiences. But yeah, it's going to change. And, you know, I hate to be that person, but that is one of the nice things about growing older is you do learn. You do fail and you figure things out, which is nice.
I mean, it's a problem. Because I do think that most people make this kind of assumption where if somebody hurts your feelings, that automatically means they did something wrong, which is, you know, what I see often, especially with the couples, that, you know, is if someone triggered you, then they must have done something wrong to have triggered you. And oftentimes that could be true, but oftentimes just because they did something to trigger you doesn't mean they did something wrong. You know, that people are not wanting to own their experience in a way where they would take responsibility, not blame, but responsibility and understanding, okay, what happened in this dynamic and where did I get hurt? Because oftentimes in relationships, you know, our partners are going to say something and we may not like it, but simply them communicating something that we don't like doesn't necessarily mean that they did something to hurt us. But then the problem is that most couples then get into this awful dynamic where they're like, you did this to me. And it's like, well, no, they didn't do anything to you. They verbalized their needs and you didn't like how they said it or what that implied, but they didn't hurt you or they triggered you, but they didn't do that on purpose. And there's nothing they need to apologize for, which is a dynamic I see with couples all the time is they're like, I mean, I just want them to apologize, you know, wanting this kind of accountability and demanding accountability for something that they really didn't do anything other than, you know, they got upset at you because you're disappointing. And so, you know, it's a real issue in all kinds of relationships, but especially with the couples that I see and in my own experience in relationships when, you know, I've had experiences where I would like verbalize you know, wanting more of something or less of something. And it was triggering for them because they couldn't tolerate hearing that. And then they felt shame and blamed me for shaming them. And I was like, no, I was just asking for more affection, mm-hmm. or, you know, for you to do something nice for me. You know, it's, but I mean, that's a whole other story. But, you know, there's all of this confusion around, you know, what does someone causing me to feel an emotion that hurts mean?
Yes.
And many mm-hmm. people are defaulting to this place of, you know, it's their fault. They hurt me. You know, they did something bad. You know, they made me feel unsafe. And it's like, well, the conversation is a little bit more complicated than that, because it might be that they touched an earlier wound unknowingly, and or because they were feeling wounded or triggered, or in response to a very complicated dynamic. And, you know, it's not a matter of they touch this, it's their fault for touching it. It's a problem. It's a problem. And I think it's something that everyone deals yeah. with. It's just, mm-hmm. I think, a part of relationships is that we so quickly want to be like, you did this, you hurt me. And it takes, I think, a lot of skill. And it is sometimes just mission impossible to get to the place. I mean, I don't know if it's impossible to get to the place of, well, you triggered me and it's only about me. You know, I think we have our reactions. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, afterwards, it can be important to mm-hmm. kind of be like, okay, well, what was really happening for me? Was it really a big deal that they said or didn't call or whatever? And oftentimes, you know, it's a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm. I mean, but like even learning to take feedback is a skill. But it's like too bad, right? Because it is sort of like that is the point of being in a relationship. If someone's trying to give you feedback, obviously this is broad. But in general, the best way to interpret this is they want to continue the relationship with you. They want to make it work. And then a lot of relationships become just like managing someone's reactions to feedback, right? Instead of actually working on the relationship, and you sort of spawn all of these other issues. But yeah, I think like the ability to take feedback, the ability to sit in your body with how your reaction feels is just one of the most underrated, powerful skills that I feel like we're missing.
Well, in like, this day and age. Todd, you say this all the time, so I don't preach to the choir, but it's like, it's not your partner's job to be constantly emotionally regulating you or like emotionally regulating like mm-hmm. for you. Like so much of that does fall to like our individual work of being able to like navigate that inner world and sit with it and be like, exactly as you said, like, why am I feeling this way? Like what really happened there? Was it about them or was it about me? And I think, you know, as I've been in this new relationship and I was single for like quite some time leading up to this, I've been trying really hard to sit with like, is this something that I'm upset with? Or was this like a preconceived notion that I had in my mind of like what things should be and how it should be, right? And like you also sometimes like you have to include your partner, I think, in that conversation to let them know like, hey, like this is what happened in my brain. Like, and it wasn't about mm-hmm. you, but this is how I'm realizing I work, like, in this dynamic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think the interesting thing about co-regulation is that oftentimes I think it is okay to expect a partner to help you regulate,
yeah,
but it's oftentimes for sure. The very moment we want our partners to regulate us or to be there for us is the very moment that we have triggered them, or they are triggered, or they are busy, or they just can't provide
yes.
us with that yes. co-regulation. Because that's, you know, one of the greatest parts of being in a relationship. You can get a hug. It feels great.
Yeah.
You know, you can have sex. It feels great. Mm-hmm. But like oftentimes when we're saying we want our needs met or we want to be held or validated, which I would love to just delete the word, you know, it's at a very time when our partners are feeling invalidated themselves, and we just cannot 24/7 rely
yeah.
on our partner to have this continuous flow of validation and actions to help us regulate, you know. So just a caveat with that. And that's the kind of mindfuck of relationships, is that so often, like, this is how these dynamics happen. It's so hard to you know, there's no kind of solution. It's just kind of like getting through it. Because after a while, you know, that's how these dynamics form. They really do form around, you know, we get triggered at the same time. The way that you respond is the very thing that triggers mm-hmm. me, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And then, yeah, you're spending a lot of time working on your reactions.
Reaction is your favorite word. And I love it. I might adopt it. Yeah.
Reaction?
I might start using it. I mean, I do, but, you know, I'm being conditioned.
Yeah, I get stuck on certain words.
Being indoctrinated. But it's very true.
I think for those of us that have been creating content for a really long time and have kind of been through mm-hmm. the trends and, you know, the ups and the downs of what it means to be putting content out consistently and like trying to build businesses online, what have you, like, I think all of us who have been in this for a while are like sick of ourselves right now. Like, that's kind of like the vibe that I'm getting from a lot of other people that like I DM with or talk to. Like, I feel like we're all feeling like we're kind of saying the same thing and kind of reckoning with like, how did we contribute to like the therapy speak chronically online problem, you know? And like, was it us? Was it coaches? Was it a mix of both and the coaches, coaching coaches, mm-hmm. coaching coaches of it all? And, you know, I think it's a weird time to be trying to like speak truth to things and like introduce complexity. And I think it's interesting how people are so afraid of that when really, like, if you let it, it's actually like quite liberating. If you let yourself realize that like life mm-hmm. is in fact messy, it's just all messy. Mm-hmm. And if you can take time to like find some type of like purpose and meaning in that, like the rest of your life opens up. Like if you just allow it to be like, oh, I don't have to have it figured out. I don't have to do it perfectly. I don't have to get it right. Like I can make a mistake and I have the capacity to repair and deal with things. But people aren't ready to accept that yet. And I find that really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Agree. Life totally. Is fucking insane.
Insane.
It's crazy. It's fully crazy. It's really crazy. This world is nuts. It's crazy.
Todd, where can people find more from you? Can you tell us about your book?
You can find me on Instagram at @yourdiagnonsense. I am on TikTok. I don't know what my name is. I think it's Todd Barrett's on TikTok. My book, How to Love Somebody Without Losing Your Mind, came out 2 years ago, which you can get anywhere. Yeah, Substack. You can find me on Substack.
Todd, thank you so much. This was such a great conversation.
It was good to meet you, Sam, and good to see you again, Amanda.